With over 400,000 people in the stands, searing heat, cars catching on fire, crashes, and disqualifications, that can only mean one thing, that this is round three, and this was the Australian Grand Prix. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another fine episode. My name is Kelsey, and welcome to F101. Ladies and gentlemen, let's start off with qualifying Saturday morning. Early morning because it was in Australia. So if you're in Canada, if you're living in Calgary, just like my fine self, that means that qualification started at midnight and finished up at 1 o'clock. But you know what? It was absolutely worth it. It was full of travesty, crashes, disqualifications. It was actually one of the best qualifying sessions that I have seen in a very, very long time. Let's start off with the crashes. Everyone ended up being okay, but you know, the goat of crashes, essentially, for the last couple of years, Nicholas Latifi, involved in another one. Unfortunately for him, he did not get out of qualifying one, but at least for him, he didn't actually cause this crash this time. It was caused by Lance Stroll of the Aston Martin team. I mean, to break it down to you, Latifi had absolutely nothing to do with this. It wasn't his fault. He was just driving along, going to pass Lance Stroll, and Lance didn't check his mirrors and just literally turned right into him. Goes around, starts blaming Latifi that Latifi caused the crash, which is absolutely unfair. When you're going to pass a guy, you're expecting the person you're passing to be paying attention. It's kind of what you do. It's just safe driving abilities all the way around. You guys are driving cars that are, you know, way above anybody else's capacity to drive. It's what they do for a living. Lance Stroll taking out Nicholas Latifi and just destroying Latifi's car. So unfortunately for him, that caused a red flag in qualifying one. It was about a 15-minute wait while they cleaned up the mess, and it was a mess. There were tires missing. There was, you know, graphite everywhere. There was just the body of the car was just everywhere. But thankfully, he got out of the car. He was fine, and then they continued on with qualification. So when I explain, and you're going to hear a bunch of times when you watch Formula One, when you hear red flags, yellow flags. So let me explain the flag system to you. Essentially what those are is that it tells drivers on the rest of the course if there's a small crash, if there's a major crash, if the race or qualifying in this case has actually stopped. So this crash caused a red flag, which means that all the cars that are on the track will complete a very slow lap back to the pit lanes, so the marshals are able to actually get the debris off the track, making it safer for people again, and to make sure that the drivers are okay. If there is a small incident, let's say somebody slides off the track and hits the wall, but it's not a major crash, or somebody spins out, then you're going to get what's called a cautionary flag or yellow flags. That means that you have to go to 40% of your top speed, and you have to, in an orderly fashion, there is no passing, there is no aggressive driving, that you have to go all the way around the track until that incident is actually cleared, and then you can continue on with the race. Green flag, green race, you're good to go. If there's a major crash that doesn't need a red flag, you're going to get what's called a safety car. And literally what that is that it is kind of like a marshal on the actual racetrack. It's a physical car. It keeps the race car drivers in a line, make sure that nobody passes. And it's a reminder that it's a medium, but not a major crash, but they still have to pay attention. This new track that they were on today, I mean, is definitely prone to flags and crashes. It's very entertaining to watch. They were at Albert Park in Australia, 14 turns, 5.27 kilometers, top speed, 305 kilometers. So it's one of the faster tracks on the calendar. Last time they raced at this track, 2018, so they've had plenty of time to rebuild it, and rebuild it they did. They took three corners out. They made a nice long extra straightaway, as well as they sharpened up some of the corners. So they're making the drivers pay attention a little bit more, and it creates more interesting driving to watch. It gets the cars closer together, and it also promotes more overtaking, so the drivers have to fight that much harder. It's a great track. Normally when you get new tracks, the track surface is oily, so there's a lot of slippage, there's a lot of cars that can't go their top speed, you know, so on and so forth. But what they did in Australia, I don't know how they did it, but these guys deserve a round of applause, because this brand new track was amazing. Plenty of overtaking, great straight stretches, not as wide as it used to be. It's making the drivers pay attention. It's making the drivers take a little bit more risks than they want to initially, and especially in these brand new cars, it was great. So going back to the qualification, Lance Stroll received points on his license for the crash. Now, just like you and I, race car drivers, Formula One drivers, they have what's called a super license. It is essentially they've gone through all the training they need to, and it's their driver's license for Formula One. So you can actually get points on your super license, just like we can get points on our license. And you get them for the same reasons. It's for unsafe driving, in this case, not paying attention, causing a crash, and, you know, following the pace car too closely. It's just not obeying the rules of, you know, essentially the road in this case, which is the racetrack. So on the super license, you get 12 points. And penalties will occur anywhere between 1 point all the way up to, if you get what a black flag, essentially you get 12 points on your license right away. You're suspended. You can't finish that race. So as it sits right now, you're only in three races. Lance Stroll already has 8 points on his license. You get to 12 points, you get suspended for one race. So the way he's driving this year, I can see him getting suspended, two, maybe three times for how he's driving. He doesn't look like a professional. He also doesn't look like he really cares at this point. It doesn't look like he's having any kind of fun. He's super frustrated, and he's making rookie mistakes. Like, you always check your mirrors when you're driving. The Formula One drivers, they check their mirrors when they're driving to avoid crashes, to avoid conflict or, you know, anything along those lines. So I hope he gets it straightened out. I hope he pays attention, or he may be out of a seat before the end of the season or even for next season. So hopefully he gets it straightened out. Moving on, I talked about disqualifications. So Alex Albon, he drives for Alpine. His car stopped after Q1. So qualifications 1, 2, and 3, they all have a 15-minute time frame. You have 15 minutes to get the fastest lap, and then you move on to Q2 and Q3. If you're fast enough, it dictates top 10, top 15. So Alex Albon got into Q2 with a nice fast track time, but his car stalled because it ran out of gas. This is the first time this season that someone has ran out of gas. I brought it up in the first episode. Heavier cars, bigger workload. They never said if the fuel cells were bigger. They never said how much extra horsepower and how much extra fuel these engines are going to need. Well, we found out that, around Australia, if you don't pay attention or if you don't fill up your tank enough, that you're going to not be able to finish qualification. Now, normally that itself wouldn't get him disqualified. But what the FIA does is that anytime a car runs out of gas or a car wins or just random, think of it like random drug testing, but for cars. They take a fuel sample and then they determine what's actually in that fuel itself, making sure that there's no extra additives that aren't supposed to be there, making sure that they're running as clean as they possibly can. Now, that states that the FIA need to be able to take a 1 liter sample from your tank. Okay, so that doesn't seem like that much. It's a liter. But don't forget how much fuel these cars go through. So Alex Albon had a third of what it actually needed. They couldn't get the test that they determined if the gas was juiced, if it was legal, or anything along that line. So they suspended him and disqualified him for the rest of qualifying period, which means he starts at the back of the pack no matter what, And he was on a tear. He was doing really, really, really well. He was driving confidently. He was driving like he knew the track. It was going to be really good. And then he just, you know, ran out of gas. So unfortunately for him, that's where he started the race. He did well in the race, but we're going to get to that in a minute. His partner, on the other hand, Fernando Alonso, qualified 10th. Fantastic race. Really good, consistent driving. He's confident. He's got more years on that track than anybody else. And just racing in general for Formula One. He did very, very well. Made it out of Q1. Qualified 10th. Unfortunately for him, that's where his day ended. So he hit Q2. He was going along. And just at the very end of time, he's going to make it into qualifying 3, which places the first 10 people. But his car, hydraulic failure. His engine shuts off as a safety feature, which is fantastic. Now, that being said, he lost all steering. And there is no engine brake. Like when you gear down, it slows your car down a little bit. He didn't have any of that. So he hits the wall at the end of Q2. Can't compete in Q3 because you can't fix the cars in between there. So unfortunately, his day was done. But he did qualify top 10. He did do a good race when it came to race day. It's just unfortunate he didn't place any a little bit higher. But I mean, it is what it is. And, you know, the rest of qualifying was pretty uneventful. Top 10 were kind of the top 10 that you would think would happen. Leclerc, Max Verstappen was second. Perez was third. Lando Norris was fourth. Hamilton was fifth. Not a great day for Hamilton, but much, much better than he has done the last couple races. Russell was right behind him in sixth. Ricardo right behind him in seventh. So, I mean, the mid-level guys and the top-tier guys, now they're starting to find their rhythm. They're starting to find their pace. They can find out what these cars can do and how far they can push them and what they can and cannot guesswork with. So, race day, again, early morning, depending on how you want to look at it. Race day in Australia, 41 degrees Celsius, and that's on the track. So these guys are sitting in their cars, and it's 41 degrees off that tarmac. First thing that popped to mind and that you did see in the race was what tire degradation was going to be like. Pirelli hasn't been guessing, but they've been getting better. They really haven't had a whole lot of success yet. They haven't had a whole lot of failure in their new tire compounds, which is great for them. Makes it a little less guessing work for the drivers in this race. Nice and hot. The tires didn't do too bad as long as you didn't push them too hard. The top teams, they always are going to push their cars. They went through tires a little faster than they wanted to. This race can be a one-stop race if you drive conservatively when you need to and you push when you have to. Red Bull, I mean, they just pushed the whole time. Max Verstappen pushed. He didn't have the greatest luck in tires, but he also drives more aggressively than anybody else on the grid. So it is to be expected that he's going to blow through tires a lot faster than, let's say, Checo or Lando or, I mean, even Hamilton. Hamilton himself, he really, really knows how to read these tires. And just tires in general, he's got the experience. So a little bit of tire degradation for them. Not a massive issue, in my opinion. The drivers themselves are really learning how to deal with these new compounds, which was fantastic. Ferrari, again, starting on pole, followed by the Red Bulls. I mean, that's how this season's going to go. I mean, that's how it's going to go from the first race. It's how it's going to go from the last race, in my opinion. They're just the top team. They're the top tier cars. That's how it's going to go. That's how the season is supposed to go. You're not supposed to know exactly who's starting and who's not, who's going to be first to who's going to be fifth. I love the guesswork. And again, this just shows how great this season is going to be. A lot of driver errors. On that note, they know this track, but a lot of driver errors because they did switch out this track. Like they said, they took out a couple of corners. They sharpened up some corners. A new tarmac. Generally, that doesn't mess with the drivers, but then you throw in, it was an afternoon race, so about halfway through the race, the sun started to go down, so half of that race, they're actually staring into the sun, and for how low they sit in their cars, some of the drivers were noticeably slowing down on the track because they couldn't really see at times. I know they've got visors, they're tinted to a certain extent, but you still have to be able to see. But it's just, it's more forced errors than I've seen in a while. I mean, throw in the fact that they're still learning new cars, that never really helps. It just made for definitely not an amateur race, but definitely it made for, you know, a few more interesting moments that you necessarily weren't expecting just because they couldn't see new track, new cars. But these guys are professionals. They're learning every single day. They're learning in training. They're learning on the track. They're just going to get better throughout the season, which makes it just more competitive from the first race to the last race and everything in between. So it was a great qualifying. The race itself was smooth to a certain extent. The time just blew by and you didn't want to leave. You didn't want to go get a drink. If you had to go to the washroom, you were going to wait until, you know, the very end of the race because you didn't want to miss anything at all. So let's break down some of the teams, some of the notable things that happened this weekend, some good, some bad, and some totally to be expected from this season at least. We're going to start off with Aston Martin. Yeah, it was a horrible weekend for them. Not going to lie, they could not wait for this weekend to be over any faster than it was. Sebastian Vettel crashed in full practice one, went straight into the wall, destroyed the car. He missed the rest of the practice sessions. They had to rebuild the power unit. They had to rebuild essentially the entire front left end of the car, plus the engine itself. It took them so long that he was only able to get one lap in for qualifying, and he placed 18th. Not his problem. The technicians and mechanics were amazing. They got that car together for him to at least get one lap in to get him going. This is his first race back. He did catch COVID. He missed the first two races. Now he comes back. He's in Australia. Crashes the car in full practice one. They get him out. He starts the race. 37 laps in, his bad luck just absolutely continues. He hits the wall in a very uncharacteristic error for Sebastian Vettel that he never does this. He never just crashes and loses control. Well, in this case, he did. It was just, there's no explanation for this. So, I mean, it's 2 days in a row. He's destroyed the car, and he just couldn't wait for this. He couldn't wait for this weekend to be over. He got fined 5,000 euros for driving a scooter on the track without authorization from the FIA. Some things that some fans don't recognize is that this is what Sebastian does. Everybody loves him because of his personality. He picks up garbage from the stands after the races. He's very environmentally conscious. He rides a bike to the Grand Prix whenever he can. And he does stuff like ride a scooter around a Formula One track just to get more information, wearing his helmet. It was hilarious to see. The fans love him for it, but he gets slapped with a 5,000 euro fine. So he's glad that this weekend is absolutely done. He can take a break. He can relax. But my question is, did he come back too early? He was out for 2 weeks. Apparently, he had a severe case of COVID. It affects everybody differently, but he doesn't seem F1 ready, in my opinion. It looks like he needed to take at least another 2 weeks, get his mind right, get some practice in the simulators, get what they call F1 ready. And I just think he was so enthusiastic and so gung-ho to get back in the cockpit that it just kind of screwed him up this weekend. Hopefully it doesn't set him back mentally for the next race, but I mean, you can only, time will tell. You can only wait, you can only see. But I think Sebastian's going to come back and he's going to be his old self again. He's going to kill it. He's going to have some fun and we'll see him get those points. We'll see him get those points. We'll see him finish those races and he'll be back to himself. His partner on the other hand, Lance Stroll, he's the one that we had talked about earlier in qualifying where he crashed into Latifi, catches the points on his license. I mean, he's got 8 points. You can only go to 12. He's got to pull his head out of his ass. His dad is 3/4 owner in the Aston Martin team. That shouldn't matter, man. You're driving a Formula One car. People would kill to be in your position. Drive like you want to be there. Drive like you mean it. Don't be such a baby in blaming other people for what just happened when everybody that saw it, the commentators, the fans, the journalists, it's your fault. If everybody says it looks like a duck, sounds like a duck, it's probably a duck. In this case, you're the duck. You caused the crash, own up to it, pull your head out of your ass, and just race. He got a three-spot penalty grid from that, and he finished in 12th. He had a very lackluster performance at the race. He didn't do anything. He was just, you know, didn't make an impact at all. He was just kind of there to take up space. Nothing spectacular, nothing awe-inspiring, and honestly, you know, quite forgettable. Like, does he even want to be there anymore? How much longer will he be in Aston Martin, even though his dad's there, his dad got him the job? I mean, if you don't want to be there, you're not going to be there much longer. All right, let's move on. The Mercs, Mercedes, they're almost back to where they should be, in my opinion. They're placing fourth and third, respectively, in this race. Both drivers, Lewis Hamilton, George Russell, their driving was much more confident. Still had a lot of porpoising, still a lot of bouncing up and down, but they're starting to dial this in. Their corners are faster, their communication is better, their driving prowess, their driving essence is starting to come back. They're driving like it's second nature all over again. They're forgetting it's a new car, they're forgetting it's some new rules, and they're just driving for the love of it. Hamilton finished in fourth today. His racing form's coming back. He's starting to score points. He's starting to move up that grid just exactly where he needed to be. I mean, he's a 7-time world champion, for God's sakes. It wouldn't take him long to get it figured out. And I think from moving here on out, he's only going to be placing in top five from these races forward unless something mechanical happens or somebody hits him. If it's in his hands, he's doing top five from here to the rest of the season. He's got his swagger back. I think he's got his confidence back. He's driving smart like we all know he can. He knows when to attack. He knows when to just follow behind other drivers, get that slipstream, save some gas, save some tires. And he's going to go up from here on out. The only thing that was noticeable today is that his pace was nowhere near George Russell's today. George Russell finished in third, but Hamilton, it seemed like no matter how hard he tried, he couldn't catch up. He did his pit lane, or his pit stops faster. He swapped tires to the hards when everyone else was on medium still. He's trying everything he knows, and he got the result. He got the points, but he just couldn't keep up to Russell, and it's only the third race. Russell's outpointed him so far. I think I see the beginning of the future of Mercedes. Is it time for the changing of the guard? I think we see it happening race by race. Hamilton, I think, will start playing that mentor position. He still wants the points. He still wants his eighth championship. But I think at some point, he's not going to be able to deny the fact that he's going to be driver number two. And essentially, that just means you are George Russell's wingman from here on to the rest of the season. Which, I mean, for him is not the worst thing in the world. He is a fantastic teacher from anybody who has talked to him. He's got fantastic driving sense. You can only learn from him if he wants to take that role. And I don't think he really has he doesn't really have an option at this point. George Russell is just going to continue to outrace him, in my opinion. Cars are almost identical. The engines are the same, but they don't look like they're the same car. One looks miles faster than the other, and it's going to happen whether he likes it or not. Speaking of George Russell, P3 today, he got on the podium, first time as a Merc, and I think it's only his second or third podium in Formula One, from my recollection. I mean, if I'm wrong, please, people out there listening, just let me know, but I'm pretty sure this is only his second or third podium ever. He is maturing at a rate that only legends can mature at when you go from a bottom of the tier team of Williams to the top of the tier team Mercedes. His driving, he makes it look so effortless. It makes it look like he's been driving for decades. It's very mature driving. It's very smart decision making. He knows when to push the other cars. He knows when to not push the other cars. And he still thinks that he needs to prove himself. Yeah, he's made it to Mercedes, but people were still going to think that he's going to be the second driver to Hamilton. And he's sitting back as the young buck going, you know what? No, I'm here to be the first driver. I'm here to win races. I'm here to take championships. I'm here to win points. So, you know what? George Russell, fantastic driver. He is certainly the future of Mercedes, and that future is coming fast, and it's going to come hard. And if the other drivers aren't paying attention, they will be left in the dust. He is definitely a future number one driver, and he's going to win many, many, many podiums from here on out. Let's move on to, you know, the top two teams. One had a fantastic day. One had a mediocre day. Let's start with the one with the mediocre day. Let's start with Red Bull. Max Verstappen, you know what? Started in second. He was looking really, really good. But for the second time in three races, he did not finish this race. He had, I think it was like 15 laps left, less than that. He was still 7 seconds behind Leclerc today, but he was keeping the pace. He was doing well. He was on track to, you know, second place, get podium, get points for the team. Then all of a sudden he gets instructions to pull over and get out of the car. Not only does he get out of the car and it's smoking, but when the camera angle hits it, the back of his car is on fire. His car caught on fire again. Fuel leak this time, from what all reports are saying, for as much as Red Bull is saying, everyone's, you know, doing their detective work and they're thinking that it is a fuel leak. Now, they've had that same issue in the first race this year, and it's back again for the third race this year. I mean, I know they're I come back to it. I know that Red Bull's making their engines and all this jazz, but they got to get it figured out. I mean, your number one driver's car caught on fire twice, all right? He is the moneymaker. He's the one that you're supposed to have the best car for, and it's caught on fire twice. What are you guys doing? What have you changed from the Honda engine to now? It doesn't make sense. It shouldn't be this difficult to figure it out. Max is super disappointed, but I mean, the class act that he is, he also understands there's only so much he can do when the car is just not performing to his standards. He was complaining that the car was not, you know, wasn't feeling right all weekend. I think at this point, he is having troubles learning to drive this car. He's not adapting as well as personally I had hoped, and I don't think he's adapting as well as he had hoped. He's not as aggressive as he was in the old car. He seems like he's lost his step. He seems like he's scared to drive this car, like he doesn't know what it's going to do, which is a fair statement coming from someone who doesn't drive Formula One cars, but it's your third race. It's only so much practice time, and then you really have to do the real life figuring things out on the fly, learning how the car goes left, right, up, and down. Like, he'll figure this out. I have absolutely no issue that he won't, but it's just not the same. It's not the championship Max Verstappen that everybody loves and everybody wants to see succeed this year. I think he needs to figure this out soon, like sooner rather than later. His teammate Checo, he's coming up behind him. He's learned this car a lot faster. It's more of Checo's driving style. It's not so aggressive. It's more of you go with the flow of the track. You pick your points of attack and you go from there. You learn. You become one with the car, where Max is trying to make the car drive to him. And it's not working at this point. So figure it out. Take some time. You've got 2 weeks to the next race. Hit the simulators. Don't complain. Just put your nose down. Get the job done. Do the grunt work like everybody else. And it's going to be great. Partnership. Checo. He finished P2 today. Great race from him. Great consistency. Great strategies in the pit lanes when he got his tires on. He pressed the race when he needed to. And he just hung in there. He's like that dirty shirt that you keep finding. You try to throw it and it just keeps coming back and coming back and coming back. He was in the middle of everywhere today. He was patient. He was very, very patient. He played the long game. He didn't get out front too fast. He didn't try to overtake cars when he didn't need to or when he knew it wasn't going to happen. So, I mean, it was great to see him find that flow. him in the car, they're jiving right now. So I see him a lot more podiums, a lot more points, and I think he's going to give Max a run for his money today, or this year, I should say. He's not going to be playing second fiddle. He's not going to be the Mexican Minister of Defense as he's known for defending against Hamilton last year. He's going to be pushing Max to do better. And in return, they're both going to get the points. Checo can definitely go up from here. They just both have to find that pace. Red Bull in general, they've been good. They haven't been great. It kind of looks like that out of shape athlete. You know how great they can be. They just got to put in the time and practice just a little bit more. That's what the Red Bull team is looking like. It looks like they know where they need to be. They're trying. They just can't quite get there yet. I'm saying by the mid-season break, they're going to be top form again. They're going to be challenging Ferrari still, if not pushing Ferrari even closer to that, just to that line to try to get that edge. I think it's going to be fantastic, but they do have to figure this out sooner rather than later. Speaking of Ferrari, you know, it's the horsepower, it's the ponies running again. Ferrari out front, Charles Leclerc, I should say, P1, he landed pole and he never gave up the lead the entire race. Every single lap he was ahead. Even when he got his pit stop, he didn't have to work his way back up to first. He was the leader from start to finish. At one point, he was 14 seconds ahead of the second place guy of Checo. 14 seconds. That's an eternity in F1. Even with the crashes and the delays in the race, the yellow flags, nobody was even close to him today. I don't know what Ferrari did in the offseason, how much research they put in, but whatever they've done is absolutely amazing. Ferrari's got such pace that you haven't seen this pace in years. Like, and I'm talking like 5 or more years. Ferrari's just not been this fast. The power is unbelievable. The consistency is like we've never seen in my lifetime. It's amazing. What can you say? It's the Ferrari of old. It's the Ferrari that you think of. It's the Scuderia. It's the legacy that's coming forth now with these new cars, with these new engines that they've put in. You know, it's Charles Leclerc getting first. Carlos Sainz, unfortunately for him, today was just, it was not his day. He made 2 laps, lost control, and got beached in gravel. So, uncharacteristically unfortunate for him, he at one point on the radio asked his support if the marshals could come and push him out. He was that dumbfounded. You never ask for help like that. It was just, he wasn't even in the race yet. He qualified P9 way further down than he should have been. It was an off weekend for him. It was an off weekend for Ferrari for one of their cars. I think he panicked a little bit and he tried to catch up too fast, but Carlos Sainz ended up in the gravel today. So minus that little oopsie from him, and that Ferrari's going to get the championship points they need. Leclerc is almost 50 points clear of his closest competitor, and it's not Max Verstappen. It's George Russell. Like, it's one of those, the further Ferrari goes, the better they get, the more dominating they're going to become, the harder it's going to be for everybody else to try and catch up. Like, they spent so much time on the development of the engine and the chassis and everything like that. Even Lewis Hamilton said that they're at least 3.5 months ahead of everybody else. And it's showing. The consistency and the pace, it's unmatched. And teams like Mercedes and Red Bull, they really have to figure out, and fast, what they need to do to catch up to Ferrari. If you weren't paying attention to the top five, you would have seen a fantastic battle in the midfield between McLaren and one specific Haas driver, Kevin Magnussen. It was back and forth between the three of them for probably 15 laps, 16 laps. It was amazing. this is the type of Formula One racing that brings people in. It's exciting. It's back and forth. McLaren defended very, very well. At one point, Kevin Magnussen split the two McLarens. He gained his spot, and it's just back and forth, and it kept the pace great. It kept other drivers in check. It was entertaining. Like, it was literally one of those where you cannot look away. And I expect to see McLaren and Haas fight for midfield supremacy more often than not this year. They both have the speed. They've both got the consistency. The drivers, everyone's experienced. Everyone's on a high. They're doing very, very well for both teams. So I expect to see them do much more of this throughout the year. And it's going to bring people in. It's going to make things even more exciting. And we're going to be, it'll add more races to the calendar. Stay tuned to the end of the episode, because I got a hint about new races on the calendar that I think everybody, and I mean everybody's going to be very excited about it. Charles Leclerc ran away with the pole. He was 7 seconds away. He won the race, followed by Checo Perez, George Russell, Hamilton in fourth, and Lando Norris in fifth. It's nice to see a McLaren in the top five. And only two spots behind, Ricciardo in seventh. McLaren had been struggling at the beginning of the season. They struggled a little bit at the end of last season. So it's really nice to see that all the hard work and effort from both drivers, from the teams, it's really starting to pay off. They're fan favorites. They're crowd favorites. Everybody loves them, especially Ricciardo. He's a character. This was his home race, and to get in the top 10 for him, it's a big deal. Generally, in the past, he doesn't have the best luck in Australia in his home races, but this time, it was amazing. And this race itself was just absolutely amazing. Definitely one that I would go back to watch again, take points, and just enjoy a fantastic race. So, like I had alluded to before a couple minutes ago, they have added a new race, a new track to the calendar for 2023. And we're going to Viva Las Vegas, baby. 2023, they're racing down the strip. So some people think that this is the first time that Formula One has been in Vegas, which is not true. They were first in Vegas in 1981, 1982, both times, and this time 75 laps. But in the 80s, it was a counterclockwise race, which made it very unique for Formula One. And it would still be very unique if they went counterclockwise now. The only difference and major, major upgrade in this case is that in the 80s, both races were done in the Caesars Palace parking lot. It was a joke. It was embarrassing. It was their first attempt, granted, but they could have put a lot more effort into it. The drivers hated the track, the teams hated the track, and they never went back since. Now, November 2023, it's going to be a night race in Vegas, which is fantastic. So what they're doing is that they're incorporating the entire main strip of Las Vegas at night as the biggest straightaway in Vegas for that race. Now we're talking, they're repaving the entire strip. It's going to be brand new. You're going in front of Caesar's Palace. You're going 210 miles per hour down that straight stretch. It's going to be amazing. The drivers are going to love it. It's going to flock fans in as well. I mean, 50 laps. The total course length, 6.1 kilometers, 14 corners, three main stretches, and like I said, 210 mile an hour top speed. It's going to be great. The only thing that is slightly embarrassing, and maybe it's just because where it is or the time it is or just restrictions on time limit, is that it is a very basic course. And if you take an aerial shot at it, or if you go to F1.com, you can see the outline of the race itself, of the course in Vegas. It looks very simple. The straight stretches are not that long minus the strip. I mean, 14 corners is not that much. They're not complicated corners, and they look like it's in the shape of a pig lying down. I mean, it seems typically American. It seems just very simple. I don't want to say it like that, but it does. It seems very, very simple. It's a great comeback for Vegas. I hope the race does very, very well. At the same time, I hope it doesn't. So it makes them think outside of the box, besides just adding another street course and, you know, using the strip and the lights and the fanciness and just an advertisement for Las Vegas. This should be an advertisement for Formula One and how well the drivers actually do. You want to bring people in. It's going to bring people into Vegas. Not like they needed the help, but I think it's going to be more about the glitz and glamour opposed to the quality of the circuit, the quality of the race itself. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. I'm hoping that I'll be able to make it out for that, but you know, we'll see. Something I want to introduce to you guys on a different point is that I've mentioned before the driver's points and constructor's points. So what this is constructors are essentially a different way of saying your team. So constructor's points are points for your team. And you get points from your team the higher your driver's place. So Leclerc getting first, and then Sainz not finishing this weekend, but last weekend he got second or third, I believe. They've accumulated, you know, 104 points for Ferrari, which makes them first in the Constructors' Series. Followed by Mercedes with 65 points, Red Bull with 55, and McLaren with 24. Now, traditionally, you're going to swap the first three. You're going to do Mercedes first, then you're going to do Red Bull, then you're going to do Ferrari. And Ferrari would have the points of McLaren a couple of years ago. They would be way, way, way behind. But because Ferrari is doing so well so early on, they're dominating the points. Both drivers are within the top three of the driver's points. So, I mean, they're going to be, again, I keep coming back to it. I know it sounds repetitive, but they're going to be a beast. So driver's points, Leclerc scored 71 points so far, followed by Russell with 37, Sainz with 33, Perez with 30, Hamilton with 28, and Verstappen with 25. Now, this is the category that most interests me, at least, because this can fluctuate so much. You get 25 points for winning. It's very unlike Hamilton and Verstappen to be at the bottom of the top six. You expect them to be the top two of the top six, but Leclerc is coming out like a demon and Russell is driving like he's got something to prove, and they both do. So three races in, I mean, the point standings just in general are very interesting. They're very exciting because I can't wait to see what the rest of the season is like. So in wrap up, next race, April 22nd to 24th, it's the Italian Grand Prix. I will see you guys in 2 weeks.